Hello there, my friends. This is Tim Binall of BinallofAmerica.com with another edition of Binall of America Audio, Season 2. It is December 2nd, 2006, and this week we have for you the Binall of America Audio UFO Crash Retrieval Conference Special. As many of you may know from past episodes of the show, I took the trip out to Las Vegas, Nevada to attend the 4th annual UFO Crash Retrieval Conference, or as I like to call it, the UFO CRC, November 10th to the 12th, 2006, in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Tuscany Suites and Casino. Super, ultra, long-time Binall of America audio listeners will remember that we got our start doing on-the-scene interviews from the X Conference 2 in Washington, D.C., back in April of 2005. Long before we were doing the Binall of America audio show, we did these on-site interviews at the X Conference. What this special is sort of a throwback to those days. We're going old school. We're going back to our roots, if you will. On-the-ground interviews from the UFO CRC. We got five great conversations for you from the big event in Las Vegas. You're going to be hearing from Richard Dolan, Nick Redfern, Dr. Michael Sala, Paul Shaskin, and Matthew Tooney. In addition to that, I want to go in a little different direction with this episode. I've heard a lot of great esoteric radio programs do conference specials, but this has been Binall of America Audio. We do things a little differently here. I wanted to add a little more depth to the proceedings. So I picked up the phone last week. I gave Ryan Wood a call. I said, Ryan, let's do a little post-conference reflection on the UFO CRC. We got Ryan Wood coming on at the end of the show to look back on the conference and to sort of go behind the curtain, if you will, on the UFO CRC. We're going to talk about how he chooses the speakers, determines the lineup, why the UFO CRC saw tremendous growth in the last year when many conferences are having a hard time even keeping going. We're covering all that with Ryan Wood, plus we've got the five on-site interviews from Las Vegas. Some things to note before we begin. First of all, definitely check out BinallofAmerica.com for my detailed text recap of the big weekend. That's where you can find out who was speaking, what they were talking about, all that great stuff. Also, check out BinallofAmerica.com for a link to some fantastic pictures taken of the event by BOA audio friend Ralph Molesworth. Ralph did a fantastic job capturing the weekend's festivities. You can check all that out at BinallofAmerica.com. Also, in light of all the great guests we have on the program for you this week, I'm going to eschew the usual lengthy biographies that we do for those of you who are unfamiliar. For those folks who are unfamiliar, go to BinallofAmerica.com, where you found this audio page. There is detailed bios of each of the six guests here on the show today. Just trying to save a little time and roll right into the action, if you will. How I'm planning on tackling this special episode is I'm going to walk you through the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference 4, presentation by presentation, give you a little thumbnail sketch of what they were talking about. Then, when we get to the folks who are featured in the on-site interviews, we'll just segue right into those, and you can hear from them what they were talking about. The on-site interviews were recorded on November 12, 2006, at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference 4 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Without any further ado, let's rock and roll and get started on the recap of the proceedings. It all kicked off on Friday night with the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman, giving a presentation on the why questions of the UFO phenomenon. You sort of got the feeling that these were the frequently asked Stan Friedman questions, the kind of stuff he probably has to answer at every public appearance. Stuff like, why don't the UFOs just land on the White House lawn? Why would a UFO crash if the ETs are so advanced? Why is the government covering up the UFO secret? That sort of thing. And, of course, Stan brought his considerable years of research and thought on the subject to these key questions. Up next was Dr. Michael Sala with a comparing and contrasting of the two whistleblower testimonies from Clifford Stone and Dan Sherman. These two guys separately claim to have been part of UFO crash retrieval operations for the government. Dr. Sala examined their two testimonies and also compared them to the Special Operations Manual 101. I'll turn it over here to Dr. Michael Sala, who I spoke with at the conference, to tell us more about what he was talking about. We're here with Dr. Michael Sala at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. Michael, for the people who couldn't make it, just give a little brief summary of what you were talking about.
Hi, Tim. Well, at this conference, I was looking at the testimony of Clifford Stone, who was one of the few people who's come forward to say that he actually worked on crash retrieval operations. And Clifford has, in the past, had a lot of criticism directed towards him because he wasn't able to substantiate a lot of his claims. So what I did at the conference was I contrasted his claims with another whistleblower, Dan Sherman, whose credentials are reliable, and people have been able to confirm that he did serve in the military and with the NSA, and also looked at Clifford's testimony in terms of the Special Operations Manual, which again I used as a way to corroborate Clifford's testimony.
And we had Paula Harris on our show a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about your appearance here and how it was a really big thing because you're part of the exopolitical movement. And maybe you can speak to that a little bit, how, since you're like an exopolitical activist of sorts, appearing in a sort of UFO conference is good for the exopolitical side.
Well, that's right. Exopolitics is really looking at studying the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. We're more interested in the policy questions. We're not interested so much in the show me that it's real, where's the hard evidence. And so this is one of the things that I think exopolitics breaks new grounds with, because we are looking at the policy implications of, say, for example, space weapons. I mean, are space weapons a good idea if extraterrestrials are flying around the planet? And we know from the evidence, especially presented at this conference, that there has been a policy of targeting extraterrestrial vehicles with ground-based radar and other ground-based weapon systems, missiles and so forth. So if they deploy space-based weapon systems using, say, directed energy weapons, you know, what's that going to mean in terms of extraterrestrial visitation? So these are important policy implications, and we need to look at that.
Yeah. And last thing, we talked about a year and a half ago. What have you been up to since we first met at the X Conference in 05? I know you got a lot of irons in the fire, so sort of just spill them out for me.
Well, basically, I've been trying to organize exopolitics in terms of, one, getting an institution, a non-profit 501c3 institution that is independently funded and that can support researchers out in the field and can produce good quality studies. Two, I've created an exopolitics journal which looks at inviting people who have scholarly studies or experiences that have exopolitical relevance, and so we have the journal up and running. And the third thing that I've been doing is organizing conferences in Hawaii where people can come out and learn about extraterrestrial civilizations and get to have some interactive experiences with dolphins, which are a non-terrestrial based intelligence that I think can help people prepare for the day when extraterrestrial visitation becomes an open phenomenon.
Awesome, awesome. Well, hey, thanks for taking some time for me. I know you're really busy, so we'll just wrap it up here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Tim.
There you have it. That was Dr. Michael Sala from the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference 4 talking about his presentation, Exopolitics, and some of the other projects he's working on now. Following Dr. Sala's presentation, we moved on to the meet and greet with the speakers. This was really a fun part of the weekend where the attendees had a chance to meet the speakers, talk to them. And some people, you know, they like to throw out their pet UFO theories at some of the speakers. And personally, I just like watching other people throw their UFO theories at the speakers and watch the reaction. Following that, all the speakers convened to the stage for the speakers panel that was emceed by Steve Bassett. Steve did a great job hosting this panel. First, they went through and all the speakers sort of gave a little preview of what they were going to be talking about for the weekend. Then he handled questions from the audience. And there were some thoughtful questions. There were some interesting questions. There was also some contentious moments when Stan Friedman discussed the Bob Lazar story, and some of the people in the audience took exception to his take on the Bob Lazar story. So that was pretty fascinating for those of us who are in the know, if you will. And this went on for quite a while. I think it wrapped up at about 11:30 at night, so everybody was pretty tired at that point, especially those people who had just got into town and those of us who were on East Coast time. There was a little bit of milling about, you know, sort of chit-chatting with people in the back of the room as people filed out, and I had a good chance to talk to next week's Been All of America audio guest, Bill Ryan, for a while on the way downstairs, and it was great to talk shop with him about the UFO phenomenon. That pretty much wrapped up Friday night. And then we head on over to Saturday morning at 8:30 in the morning. I was pretty tired, but The speaker was Richard Dolan, who is just one of my favorite speakers out there and one of, I think, one of the best folks in ufology. Richard Dolan was giving a two-part talk on, first of all, sort of the history of UFO crashes and then also the structure of secrecy. We're going to turn it over here to Richard Dolan, who I spoke with at the conference. He's going to talk about his presentation. Also, he's going to answer questions about his new book, his sci-fi channel series, future plans, all that great stuff. Here's Richard Dolan from the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. I am here with Richard Dolan, author of the critically acclaimed UFOs in the National Security State.
Hi, Tim. Nice to be on.
And for the people who couldn't make it out to Vegas, give a little snapshot of what you were talking about here at the conference.
Sure. Here at the CrashCon 2006, my thing was basically a two-part talk. A lot of it anticipates things that are going into my next book, in fact. One is a history, in a way, of the leaks themselves about crash retrievals. I mean, a lot of people forget that it wasn't, forever that we've been talking about crash retrievals of UFOs. This is really in the last couple of decades. And how have those stories come about, and what were some of the interesting, good stories that got this whole thing going, really starting in the late 1970s? Not just Roswell, but many, many other researchers throughout the 70s and 80s broke this field open by cultivating inside sources of different types. So I try to sort of give an architecture of that, like who were the actual sources, what were they saying, how credible did they seem, and so on. And then the other part of it was trying to explore, you know, how likely is it that we are shooting down UFOs or we're trying to recover them. One thing I pointed out was that there are a huge number of witnesses who've seen attempted interceptions by military jets of UFOs, and you get this all throughout the 20th century, throughout the later half of the 20th century, not just the 40s and 50s, but right through the 1980s and 1990s and our own century. And then the other thing I really tried to get into were analyzing, likely results of reverse engineered technology. In other words, you get all these video hounds hanging out at Area 51 and in Southern California, taking videos, shooting pictures down in Antelope Valley and in Nevada. There's some very, very compelling bits of evidence that have come out of those areas that certainly look as though what you call the black world, the covert world, has been working on super exotic technology that to this day has not been officially acknowledged. And then the last part of what I talked about was really trying to understand what I call the structure of secrecy. That is, how's it being paid for? Who's in charge? Who's benefiting from it? What's really going on? And it's my opinion, based on that evidence, the evidence that I've come across, that buried within the Department of Defense are a variety of what are called special access programs, or SAPs. And these are really beyond most congressional authority, or almost any congressional authority. They are ultra-secret, and it does appear to me that at least one of these SAPs, probably more, are directly related to alien technology studies. And I discussed a couple of specific reasons why I think that was the case.
Let's take care of the question that you said you've been getting all the time, and that is about the new book. It's the most anticipated sequel since Empire Strikes Back. What's the story with this so you can get some of my listeners off your back?
Yeah, well, there was some unfortunately misleading information that made it seem like the book would be out for this conference, and I'm sorry that's the case, but it's not ready. I'm thinking springtime of 07 is a very good likelihood.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. I'll look for the lines outside the borders of people camping out and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I'm expecting just huge numbers. Maybe almost 100 people might actually even be able to. No, seriously, it's within the UFO research field. There have been a lot of people who have been asking me about this for quite some time.
Yeah.
So I want to get it done.
Awesome, awesome. And a lot of people are talking about your show here on the Sci-Fi Channel. You got a lot of press for that. So talk a little bit about Sci-Fi Investigate.
Yeah, Sci-Fi Investigates was a lot of fun. I would do it again in a heartbeat. We shot 6 episodes over the summer of 06 on a variety of different kind of TV-related paranormal topics. You got UFOs, we had Bigfoot, we had Voodoo, and so on. It was myself as one of the hosts, along with 3 other individuals of different types of backgrounds, different perspectives. Not all of them believers in these things. And so it was produced by NBC for the Sci-Fi Channel. 6 episodes were shot, all but one now has been aired. Then the last one will air next Wednesday, November, the 15th, I believe. And then if the ratings are good enough, the executives want to continue it to do more episodes. I would love for that to be the case. It does take a lot of time out of my research schedule. I want to get this book done. But I enjoyed the TV stuff, I got to tell you. I had a really good time with that.
One question that I get a lot about you is when the new book comes out, when you're done with that, what obviously it's hard to really look ahead, but are you going to stay within the UFO realm, or are you going to look somewhere beyond UFOs after that?
Well, you write about UFOs, and sometimes it's hard to break into other fields because other people just don't want you. I mean, for example, 9/11. 9/11 researchers really want nothing to do with UFO researchers like myself. I can understand their perspective on this. They're afraid. I mean, they got enough to worry about. I'm still interested in this topic of UFOs, and there are a lot of things that I'm considering to dive into in more detail. As long as I feel like I'm making a contribution here, I don't see myself leaving it. I've made a very big personal commitment into learning about this. It would be hard for me, at least as I can see it right now, just to leave. Yeah. Of course, the future can't be known, but I do have plans after my second book is done to probably create a somewhat more popular single-volume condensation of the two. It's a little more manageable in length for some people. I mean, the one thing about my book I know is that it's a lot for some people's interests. I mean, it's a 500-page book, and the next one's going to be 600 to 700 pages. So that's asking a lot. So I think I'll have a nice slim volume, 200 pages with pictures, the whole thing, and that'll probably outsell the other two combined. After that, though, I really don't know. I'm interested in the phenomenon known as the triangles, and I keep thinking of doing a specific study on that. I'm interested in black budget studies, as it were. So there's a lot of directions I may be looking.
Okay. Anything you want to plug coming up in the future that people should be looking for? The new book, you said, maybe in the springtime, and the sci-fi show. Hopefully some more episodes. Anything else? Website?
KeyholePublishing.com. That's my small publishing company. No, those two things, the sci-fi show and my forthcoming book are really the two big things I'm working on.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you very much for doing this little interview here, and thanks for appearing on Banal America Audio proper last spring. I really appreciate it, and hopefully we can sit down and talk again in depth when the new book comes out.
Thank you, Tim. I'll do that anytime.
There you have it. That was Richard Dolan at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. Big thanks to Richard for taking some time out of the busy weekend to share with us a little bit about his presentation and also an update on some of the projects that he has in the works right now. Following Richard was Paul Shatskin with a tremendous presentation on early 20th century inventor T. Townsend Brown. T.T. Brown is one of the most infamous folks in the world of esoterica, much discussed, shrouded in mystery. I caught up with Paul Shatskin at the conference to talk about T. Townsend Brown, and also another famous figure that he's done a lot of research on, Philo Farnsworth, the subject of the book Paul wrote called The Boy Who Invented Television. Here now is Paul Shatskin from the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. I am here with Paul Shatskin, who gave a tremendous presentation yesterday on T. Townsend Brown. Talk a little bit about your presentation for the people who couldn't make it out to Vegas.
Well, T. Townsend Brown is a man whose name comes up frequently at conferences like this. He was the founder of NICAP back in 1956 and has been associated with UFOs ever since. He is an inventor, a physicist, and a scientist, and his principal contribution to modern civilization is what's known as now as the Ionic Breeze Air Purifier, which people are surprised to learn is based on the electrical phenomenon that Townsend Brown discovered as a teenager in the 1920s. And what causes that to come up at conferences like that is that the basic effect behind that device is regarded by many people as an anti-gravity effect.
And what drove your interest in checking out these, because you also did a book, we'll talk about the book in a little bit, but you also did a book on another early 1900s scientist. What drove your interest in these early scientists?
Well, I guess it traces back to the time when I was in the third grade, when my mother, who was desperate to get me to read anything, hauled me off to the Rumson, New Jersey Public Library to get a book. And the book that I took off the shelf was Thomas Edison's biography. And so it seems that my interest in invention goes back that far. when I was in the television business in the 1970s, I stumbled onto the story of a man named Philo T. Farnsworth, who is the 14-year-old farm boy who invented television in the 1920s, or television as we know it now, as it became an industry. And that story fascinated me, and I latched onto that story, met his family, tried to sell the story to television, was unable to do that, but finally wrote my own book of his life story that was published in 2002. And as I was finishing that book and having a book published for the first time in my life, I'm thinking about what I might do as a sequel when an anonymous email came across my inbox that said, check out this guy, T. Townsend Brown. And that's the origins of this project. An anonymous email that literally sucked me down a rabbit hole.
Wow. And now, a lot of your research on T. Townsend Brown was through his daughter and this mysterious
Individual we have codenamed Morgan.
And how did you hook up with these tremendous insiders to the story?
Well, I met Brown's daughter over a period of a few months after I got this anonymous email. I found a website that was operated on behalf of the Brown family at soteria.com. I believe it's now qualite.com. And I emailed the webmaster of that site and expressed my interest, having done a biography of a scientist before. And a few weeks later, I got an answer back that basically said the family was not really interested, but maybe this time. And I followed up, and it took about 4 months from the initial inquiry until I actually was able to get a copy of my book into Linda Brown's hands. And she wrote to me after that and said, I like your book, I like your approach, and I'm interested in doing a biography. So it was over a period of about 6 months, starting in the summer of 2002, that drew me into enough contact with the family and enough trust with the family to begin working with them. And then Morgan, who was a colleague of Townsend Brown starting in the 1960s and also an intimate of Brown's daughters at the same time, Morgan showed up about 2 years later.
Awesome, awesome. And when do you expect the T. Townsend Brown book to be available for people who want to check it out?
I'm expecting that the book will be finished about the middle of next year and available in some form 3 to 6 months after that. So let's say by the end of next year.
Okay, and you were talking about your website. Why don't you throw a plug out here for your website and where people can find out more information?
Sure. Well, the website that we've set up for the book is ttbrown.com, with or without the W's, just ttbrown.com. And I have actually posted the chapters that I've written, which is the first half of the book, which is mostly dealing with most of what's in Brown's part where he was in the white world. It's in 1942 when he pretty much disappears behind the curtain. That's the part of the book that I'll be starting when I get home. But the chapters that I have written are all online there and can be read, and there is a discussion of those chapters and the whole book and the concept and all the peripheral subjects on the website at forum.ttbrown.com. You can find a link to it at ttbrown.com, and we welcome anybody who wants to be involved in that discussion.
Awesome, awesome. And how can people pick up the other book, The Boy Who Invented Television?
The Boy Who Invented Television can be found at farnovision.com. That's FARNOvision.com.
Awesome. Well, Paul, thank you very much for taking some time with me here at the end of the conference. Everyone's tired, and I appreciate that you took some time to talk to me and share your story here with the listeners.
My pleasure. I appreciate your interest.
Thanks to Paul Shaskin for taking some time out of the busy weekend to talk to us. Following Paul's presentation was conference organizer Ryan Wood, who presented on the Devil's Hole UFO crash case. Ryan's going to talk about his presentation with a little more depth at the end of today's program in our special post-UFO CRC interview. But what I can tell you about it was that it was a really interesting look at what goes into investigating an individual UFO crash report. Ryan looked at it from a number of different avenues, including newspaper reports, witness sightings, government documents, also on-site investigation, and the use of more esoteric means like remote viewing. It was really a thorough look at what you have to do to investigate just one UFO crash report, and sort of shows you how detailed the level of investigation is on these UFO crash cases. After Ryan Wood, we heard from Michael Lindemann, who was talking about a late 1990s symposium of high-ranking, high-powered type people where the topic of discussion was dealing with ET contact. The symposium was attended by major names in various big industries, including a three-star general, folks in the entertainment industry, folks in the banking industry, religious figures, and they ended up coming up with about 8 different scenarios for how ET contact might be going down. Michael examined each of those different scenarios and tried to determine which one we may be dealing with right now. This was really groundbreaking material that I had never heard before and apparently had never been presented before. Hopefully, we'll find out more about this symposium in the future, because it sounded like there was some serious brain trust at these meetings. Up next was Peter Merlin, who was there to talk about crashes of government test craft coming out of Area 51 and how the government reacted to said crashes. This sort of gave you an interesting look at how the government deals with crashes that we know of that happened that aren't purported UFO crashes. And sort of you can look at those as a comparative study on what may be going on as far as UFO crashes go. What was probably most interesting about the presentation was that Peter visited a lot of these sites and found a lot of interesting material from these crashes. A lot of parts, a lot of fragments of the crashes, and a lot of that stuff was on display in the back of the conference hall. He had pieces of stealth fighters that had crashed and sort of pieces of the skin and stuff that was on the planes. It was really interesting stuff. And it sort of gave an indication that there may be hope that if there's a UFO crash, the government will do just as bad a job cleaning it up as they did with their regular plane crashes, and maybe we'll be able to get our hands on a piece of UFO material. After Peter Merlin, it was Frank Fascino who was talking about the Braxton County Monster. Frank was premiering his film on the Braxton County Monster, which was a pretty cool documentary featuring Stan Friedman and a number of witnesses from the Braxton incident. I had never seen the testimony of some of these first-hand witnesses before, so that was pretty fun. And also, the documentary explored how some of these folks felt about the exploitation of the Braxton County story at the time, especially in how the quote-unquote monster was portrayed in the media. After that, there was a nice little break. Everybody sort of relaxed, went back to their rooms for a while. Those of us who were lucky enough to have tickets ended up in attendance that night at the banquet, which featured a keynote address from Las Vegas TV reporter George Knapp, who is well aware of the UFO phenomenon. What is really great about the banquet is that the conference has speakers platooned at each table. So no matter where you sit, you're going to be sitting with one of the conference speakers. I was seated for the evening at the table with Richard Dolan and had a good chance to talk with Richard about baseball pretty much. Less ufology than baseball, but he did offer some insights into what went on with the writing of the first book. After everybody ate dinner, then George Knapp gave his keynote address. This was a pretty biting commentary on the state of ufology, to be honest, and I personally enjoyed it quite a bit. George talked a lot about the problems facing ufology, the perception problems, the problems with the lack of self-policing within the ufology scene, and also sort of that paranoia that has infiltrated ufology where everyone blames everybody else and throws around accusations of government influence. He also shared a lot of hilarious stories about people contacting him. Since he's sort of now the UFO reporter in the Las Vegas area, he's received correspondence from a lot of strange folks, and he shared some great stories about that. I'd say perhaps this was probably one of the best big-picture perspectives on the ufology scene that I'd heard in quite some time. I think George really hit the nail on the head as far as a lot of the issues are concerned in the field of ufology. That pretty much wrapped up Saturday night, so now we move on to Sunday morning with Bob Wood talking about potential alien viruses. Apparently he has a book coming out soon on the subject. He was talking about potential pandemics that may have actually been alien viruses. He was talking about how the government might deal with an alien virus if it happened. And also, he really brought the layperson up to speed on virology and that sort of thing for the folks like me who are sort of in the dark on that. Following Bob Wood was Nick Redfern to sort of take a UK look at the alien virus concept, most notably where the potential research into the alien viruses would take place in the UK, and also a discussion on the Berwyn Mountain incident. I had a chance to catch up with Nick Redfern at the conference, so let's turn it over to that on-the-ground interview where we'll get a lot more information on what he was presenting.
We're here in Las Vegas, Nevada at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference 4, and I am here with Nick Redfern. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks, Tim. Having a good time.
Awesome, awesome. Why don't you tell the people who are unable to make it out here to Vegas what you were talking about at the conference?
Well, I've been doing a lot of research with Bob Wood, who is one of the speakers, and is the father of Ryan Wood, the conference organizer. And I've been speaking about alien viruses allegedly found at UFO crash sites. And this is a subject that's not really delved into too greatly. The idea that maybe some of these aliens present a biological threat to us. Maybe not deliberately, but possibly, you know, through the differences in DNA, genetic makeup that when our species potentially comes into contact with some of these creatures, at least, you know, that we come off worst in terms of contracting viruses from them, which really we don't have any defense against. And there are a number of stories about alien bodies from UFO crashes reportedly being taken to establishments that specifically focus on biological warfare, like Porton Down in England and Fort Detrick in the States. So it's a case of really trying to follow the evidence, see where it leads, why this is being done, and dig out the credible cases that seem to support this scenario. And one of the ones I've been speaking about is an incident in North Wales in 1974, where something came down on a mountainside, and we have the testimony of a number of former military people who have come forward to say they were involved in the recovery of bodies that were taken to Porton Down, the British government's biological research establishment, where presumably, at least, the bodies were, you know, stored and analysed by virus experts. And I've been doing this research for about a year with Bob Wood, and between us, we've collected a fairly substantial number of accounts from both sides of the Atlantic and around the world that seem to suggest that, for some reason, not all cases, obviously, but in certain UFO events, the aliens, if you like, seem to exhibit evidence of this highly contagious and very, very deadly virus. And, you know, we're trying to determine, is it something they deliberately release to affect us? Or is it just, you know, a side effect of a body being sliced open in a crash, you know, and the body's organs and fluids being spilled out into the open? We're just not sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's potentially, it's a serious aspect of the subject. The idea that, you know, I guess we could be adversely affected or wiped out by an alien virus against, you know, which really we have no defense against.
Yeah, yeah. And now the incident you're talking about, is this the Berwyn Mountain incident? Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I actually got an email from someone in England who wanted me to talk to more people about that. So when I heard you talking about it, I was like, well, I should bring this up because then... And yeah, in England will be happy.
Right. Well, the incident on the Berwyn Mountains, which is in North Wales, occurred on the night of the 23rd of January 1974. Numerous people in the area heard what sounded like explosions, rumblings in the sky, the ground shook like an earthquake. There were stories about the police and the military cordoning off the area, stories about helicopters overflying the site as if they were looking for something. And it's become, I guess, the closest thing to like a British Roswell. And just the same as with Roswell, there's numerous theories. Some people think it was a localized earthquake and a meteorite shower. Other people think possibly a top secret aircraft crashed, or an aircraft carrying top secret equipment, maybe. Then, of course, there's the UFO theory. But in the preceding months leading up to this, about 3 months, there were sightings of a lot of objects that became known as the Phantom Helicopter. Unmarked black helicopters flying around the countryside in the dead of night. Nobody really knew what these things were. And it really sort of came to a head with the Berwyn Mountain incident. And interestingly enough, there weren't really many sightings of the helicopters after this event. It sort of died down, which in itself is strange and interesting. Now, as I said, the case occurred in 74, and it was mentioned in the UFO literature in England and some of the newsletters and magazines at the time. But it kind of died the death when local Royal Air Force rescue people went out there and said, no, there's nothing to it, we didn't find anything. And it was all scaled down and forgotten about until the mid-1990s, when it was kind of resurrected and new data, such as the story about alien bodies being taken to Porton Down from the site, began to surface. Other researchers began to look into it. More whistleblowers and former military people came forward saying, yeah, I know about the crash and the bodies found on the mountainside. And it really did, by about 97, take off to become a major case. And 10 years on, you know, people are still arguing about the case in England. You know, one person said, no, it was a natural event. Somebody else said, no, it was a UFO. And, you know, I think the important thing is at least research is still being done, even if the community doesn't agree on every aspect of the case. Rather than just let it stagnate, people are still at least trying to get to the full story, which I think is good. I find the Porton Down biological warfare virus angle an interesting one, because not many people are digging into that, and there is a lot of information out there. The one thing that is good about the Berwyn case, I guess, or significant, is it actually not that long ago. It's only 30 years, and most of the people who are involved are still alive. Yeah, they're not, you know, it's not like Roswell, where it's 60 years. So we do have the opportunity, and it's a small country, you know, so most researchers can travel to the area and interview the people. Most of them are quite open about speaking, saying, yeah, you know, we saw this, or we saw the police cordon, and, yeah, so in that respect, it's a case still worth investigating, and for the potential significance of it, I think that's one reason why we should continue to dig into it, regardless of where, you know, this researcher might say it leads, or that one says it's going to lead somewhere else. So.
Now, we had you on the show back in the spring talking about On the Trail of the Saucer Spies. What have you been up to since then?
Well, I've been doing quite a few lectures and conferences. As you know, I did Paul Kimball's conference in Canada, the New Frontiers Symposium. That went well. I've got a new book coming out in February called Celebrity Secrets, which is a study of government surveillance files on famous stars like John Lennon, Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra. And not so much sort of celebrity gossip, but more to do with official secrecy and famous people and government secrets. So doing that, I've got a conference in Kansas City in December, which is called the Dark 32 conference. And if you go to dark32er.com, you'll find all the details. There's me, paranormal author Josh Warren, and Jim Mars lecturing on everything from UFOs to cryptozoology to ghosts, paranormal subjects, conspiracies. And we're trying to make it like a road trip where, you know, do city to city, but this will be the first one. And, you know, just see how it works out and how it goes. So I think it'll be a good conference. And a couple of local events coming up in Dallas. Dallas-Fort Worth MUFON group in January, I think, about crop circles. So got a few things going on.
All right. Well, thank you very much for doing this little sit-down interview here. And good luck with the new book. And hopefully we can have you on. We'll talk about it then.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
There you go, folks. That was Nick Redfern from the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference talking about his presentation, porting down the Berwyn Mountain incident. Big thanks to Nick for taking some time out of the busy weekend to talk to us.